More goodies for us.
Frank Greenaway's Mean Friday, July 6th, year 2001. 2 p.m. hearing room.
Means committee to order, Friday, July 6th, 2:30 p.m. edition. Other bills reported out of subcommittee. Senate Bill 9, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Senate Bill 9 establishes two new programs to help low-income persons obtain prescription drugs. The first of these is the Patient Prescription Drug Assistance Program. This program will work to enroll eligible patients in the various patient assistance programs that are offered by the pharmaceutical industry. Through these programs, pharmaceutical manufacturers offer free or discounted drugs to low-income individuals. During the 2001-03 biennium, the Oregon State University College of Pharmacy, Go Beavers, will operate this program. Afterwards, the Department of Human Services has the option of contracting the program to a private pharmacy. The bill appropriates $100,000 general fund to help OSU establish the program. OSU may additionally seek other fund dollars to support it. The second program that the bill establishes is the Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program. This program will subsidize prescription purchases for low-income persons over the age of 65. The enrollees in this program will be able to purchase prescriptions at between 50% and 100% of the Medicaid price. To qualify, a person must have income no greater than 185% of the federal poverty level. They cannot have assets, excluding their home or car, of more than $2,000, and they must not have prescription drug benefit coverage. The ultimate prescription price to the patient will depend on the total funding provided for the program and on the patient's income and assets. Any cigarette tax revenue that is dedicated to the Oregon Health Plan that exceeds the current forecast will be used to fund the program. It is the intent of the legislation that the eligibility process be a simple, centralized mail-in application process within the Department of Human Services. The second program will not be implemented until the Department of Human Services obtains authorization from the Emergency Board. At that time, the department will report on its rules for identifying critical access pharmacies that are eligible to receive additional reimbursements under the bill. Your subcommittee recommends approval of Senate Bill 9A as amended.
Thank you, Senator.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to hear from staff on this regard. We're, as you know, hours approaching late, and I believe we are in need of a
Next bill.
Hey, there's at least a 9 in both of them. thank you, Senator Brown. Any questions? Any discussion? Any objections to moving Senate Bill 9 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation?
Mr. Chair, I just need to declare a potential conflict of interest as I work for a pharmacy.
So noted. Any objections to moving Senate Bill 9 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, so ordered. Senate Bill 819, Senator Handel.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, Senate Bill 819 creates the Practitioner-Managed Prescription Drug Plan, more commonly referred to as the PIMP plan. The new program will provide tools the Department of Human Services can use to manage prescription drugs in the Oregon Health Plan. Licensed practitioners retain control of decisions regarding the most effective medically appropriate prescription drugs for the Oregon Health Plan patients, but allows the state to better manage the cost of drugs by considering first the effectiveness of a given drug, then its relative cost in the marketplace. Senate Bill 819 requires regular progress reports to the Legislative Assembly and the Emergency Board on development, implementation of practitioner-managed prescription drug plan. Once implemented, the practitioner-managed prescription drug plan could generate up to $17.5 million in savings in this biennium, of which $7.4 million would be general fund. These savings will be recognized as part of the final budget. Your subcommittee wishes to acknowledge the hard work of Senator Minnis and the governor's office invested in this compromise measure and recommends you pass Senate Bill 819 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Mr. Chair, at the appropriate moment, I would move for a suspension of the rules so that the full Ways and Means Committee can make a technical amendment to Senate Bill 819. Ms. Archer from the Legislative Fiscal Office is prepared to explain what the technical amendment does.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, if you'll refer to page 3, lines 21 through 25.
Okay.
Of the A-17, the ones that we just passed out to you. What appears there is a description of a generic drug. And so that is the technical amendment. It's the description that the agency has used for over 20 years by rule, and all this does is place that in statute.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move that the, first of all, that the rules be suspended so as to make immediate action and amendment on Senate Bill 819B.
Senator Hannan has moved we suspend the rules to allow a technical amendment to Senate Bill 819B. Any objection to suspending the rules? Seeing none, so ordered. To your motion.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would move, first of all, that the Senate or the Full Ways and Means Committee rescind the dash A-16 amendments and insert the dash A-17 amendments dated 7601 presented to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Co-Chair has moved we delete the A-16s and insert the A-17s to Senate Bill 819 dated 7601. Any discussion? Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chairman, I've had the opportunity to read the dash 16, but not the dash 17. Is this the only change that we're discussing right
now? Yes.
Thank you, sir.
And the lines identified as such. Any further discussion? Senator Brown.
Mr. Co-Chair, I did get a positive nod from the governor's office, but I just want to confirm that the governor's office is okay with these amendments. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Let the record show that was Mark Gibson that was nodding so authoritatively. Yeah. Any further discussion? Any objection to removing the A-16s and substituting the A-17s? Seeing none, so ordered. Chair Hayden.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would now recommend the bill. Senate Bill 819 as amended out to the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Co-Chair Hannan has moved Senate Bill 819 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. SCR 11. Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. It is my honor to introduce Senate Concurrent Resolution 11 in memory of former Representative Michael McCracken. He is a former member of the House of Representatives. He recently passed away at a relatively young age of 58. He devoted his career to improving health care service in Oregon, both in his professional life at Oregon Health Sciences University and in his service in the Legislative Assembly. His efforts helped guide the development of improved health care access for the poor into the Oregon Health Plan. Your Subcommittee on Capital Construction, Lottery and Bonding recommends unanimous approval of Senate Concurrent Resolution 11.
Is there further discussion? Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chairman, it was my pleasure to serve with Representative McCracken, and I think that this memorial is very fitting.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection to passing Senate Concurrent Resolution 11 out to the House with a due pass recommendation? House Bill 2295, Representative Schrader.
The governor formed the Quality Education Commission by executive order in 1999 to identify costs sufficient to meet the educational goals in the Oregon Educational Act for the 21st century. November 2000, Oregon voters passed a constitutional amendment, Ballot Measure 1, which has a two-part directive to the legislature. One part is to appropriate money sufficient to meet the quality education goals established by law. It also requires a legislative report that demonstrates that funding is sufficient or an explanation of why it is not, and the effects of the state on the state system of public education to meet those goals. House Bill 2295A establishes the Quality Education Commission in statute with its work on the quality education model to become the basis for the governor's and the legislature's reporting under Ballot Measure 1. Because interim reviews and testimony this session have indicated that more work is needed on the quality education model, the Capital Construction, Lottery, and Bonding Subcommittee adopted amendments to permit the legislature to determine its basis for reporting as long as specified criteria are met. The legislature, of course, may still select the quality education model as that basis. Subcommittee recommends your approval of House Bill 2295A engrossed as amended.
Thank you, Representative Schrader. Any discussion on the quality education model? Any questions? Any objections to moving House Bill 2295 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation? Objections, Senator Miller. Seeing no other objections, so ordered.
I'll be an objection.
Senator Ferrioli, going once, going twice. Representative Hayden, any other objections to moving House Bill 2295 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing no other objections than those recorded, so ordered. House Bill 2323, Senator Brown.
Actually, Mr. Co-Chair, it's 2332.
Well, my age.
The Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs support the current version of House Bill 2332 to create a reservation enterprise zone and remove a tax disincentive to development on their reservation. Currently, non-Indian businesses are reluctant to locate there because of the threat of double taxation for both the tribe and the state can impose taxes. Despite its successes, the Warm Springs Reservation continues to have high unemployment and poverty. With declining timber cuts, Warm Springs has laid off 100 people this year. The Reservation Enterprise Zone has the same limits as Oregon's non-urban enterprise zones under ORS 285B.650 through .728. To be eligible for Reservation Enterprise Zone status, an Indian reservation must have a population density of not more than 15 persons per square mile. Only the Warm Springs and Umatilla reservations meet this requirement. The bill provides eligible new businesses with the standard three-year property tax exemption provided by counties under the non-urban enterprise zone law. The bill provides eligible new businesses with a state income tax credit for taxes, income, excise, or property payable to an Indian tribe. It's a dollar-for-dollar credit, and the tax credit and exemption are available only to non-Indian businesses. So, for example, casinos would be not eligible. To be an eligible business, a business must locate or operate on trust land within an eligible reservation on or after January 1st, 2002. The bill does not provide credits to businesses that are presently, that are already located on the reservation. We amended the bill to delete the portion that provided income tax credits to individuals for unreimbursed assistance to a disabled relative. That portion of the bill had an unacceptable revenue impact. I think that's it. Mr. Co-Chair, your subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 2332 be engrossed as amended. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Any questions regarding House Bill 2332? Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chairman, your indulgence, a question of the carrier or staff?
Yeah. Of course.
Senator, are you knowledgeable about why? I'm surprised to hear that in the sovereign Indian nation, that the timber harvest would decline. Do you have any reason why that would happen?
No, Mr. Co-Chair, but I leave one of my colleagues, Senator Farioli, can answer that, I assume.
Mr. Co-Chair, I can't answer that question. There's been a fire on the Warm Springs Indian Reservation about 2 years ago, which significantly reduced their ability to fully manage a relatively large tract. Timber prices have been relatively soft. Log availabilities have been relatively steady, but without the solid market, then there's no raw material supply conversion advantage. So many of our operators, including the Native American tribes, are choosing to leave their timber on the stand rather than milling it at this point with low prices. So it has caused displacements not only in the tribes, but there was a mill closure just very recently in Prineville. John Shelk's mill shut down. Most of the mills on the east side have been taking either a hiatus or have actually closed. And it is related not only to availability of federal forests timber, but also to soft timber prices. So.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Hayden.
To continue, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the answer, Senator. That's very instructive. A comment. I was aware that their timber resources were somewhat limited, and a number of years ago, I contacted the nation and suggested they seek administration of the Opal Creek area, which is their sovereign lands or close to them, so that they would have an expanded timber base. Apparently that has not happened. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hayden. I'd also like to point out that in the working of this bill, I certainly had numerous contacts with county officials that were somewhat concerned about the development of this tax credit, and just for the record, as I think everyone understands, that has any of those differences have been completely resolved. In Jefferson County is fully supportive of the bill. I can't speak of the Umatilla side of the equation, but I have no reason to believe that they would have any disagreements with this bill. I've heard of none. Senator Farioli.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I think the thing that may have been left out of the discussion is the relative unemployment rates in the reservation areas. The population density may be a factor of 15 persons per square mile. The unemployment rates there have run 25% higher chronically. And the economic development opportunities are somewhat hampered if people realize they may be subject to property taxes from the sovereign nation and property taxes from the county. So this is an excellent opportunity to provide an incentive that eliminates potential for double taxation, very much needed in the reservation.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions? Any other discussions? Any objections to moving House Bill 2332 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, it's ordered. House Bill 2706. Senator Brown.
Thanks, Mr. Co-Chair. As amended by the Capital Construction Lottery and Bonding Subcommittee, this bill revises several processes related to initiative petitions for state ballot measures. Provisions would require the Attorney General to draft a summary title for purposes of permitting the petition to be circulated to obtain at least 10% of the signatures required on the petition in order to qualify for the preparation of a final ballot title. Specify what must be stated on the cover of an initiative or referendum petition relating to the final measure, summary, and ballot title, and provide processes for modifying a ballot title when the Supreme Court determines the certified title does not substantially comply with certain provisions. The subcommittee heard the amendments, still provide a comment period and Supreme Court review opportunity for petitioners. They also heard that 92 challenges to ballot titles were filed with the Supreme Court in the last election cycle. I believe only 18 actually made it to the ballot. We recommend your approval of House Bill 2706 as amended.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Representative Morgan.
Question of the carrier, Mr. Co-Chair. To the good Senator, I'm looking on page 6 of the bill, section 5, subsection A, and it says signature sheets containing a number of signatures that are not less than 10% and not more than 12%. Does that mean that in order for the ballot title to even be qualified for consideration, it has to fit within that 2% window? Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Morgan, I believe that related to the petitioner's ability to collect signatures at that level, but Phil Schradl is in the room, and I believe he can respond to that question.
But briefly, right? He is also invited up. Thank you.
I didn't know if I had the ability to invite him up or not.
Well, we'll discuss that at length. We meet again.
Co-Chair Westland, member of the committee. Representative Morgan, yes, I hope I can answer your question. This changes the process so that an initiative petition summary is used for the circulation for the first 10 to 12% of the signatures. A range was chosen so that somebody...
For the record.
Philip Schradl, Special Counsel to the Attorney General. And a range was chosen so that somebody who turned in 10% plus one signature didn't lose that signature. 2% was determined by just selecting what was thought to be an appropriate range so that somebody would have the ability to know when they were in the right range to file with the Secretary of State. And then what happens after they file that number of signatures with the Secretary of State's office, that triggers then the current existing ballot title drafting process and review by the Supreme Court if somebody wants to challenge our ballot title on the Supreme Court.
May I have a follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair?
Of course.
Then am I correct in assuming that if the proponents turned in 0.9% or 12.1%, that they wouldn't qualify?
Co-Chair Westland, our Representative Morgan, if they turned in 9%, I believe that the way this bill would operate is that they would have the opportunity to submit the additional required signatures with the Secretary of State's office and then trigger the ballot title drafting process. If they did turn in more than 12%, the additional number of signatures above and beyond the 12% figure would not be counted. They would count up through the 12%, but the additional ones turned in beyond 12% would not be counted.
Thank you.
Good questions. Philip, thank you for being here again. I want to point out to all the people that have graced us with their presence today and the numerous issues running around the building that, A, we are on a very selective basis will allow testimony before the full Ways and Means Committee, and on an equally restrictive basis will allow technical amendments only, and when we have an opinion from legislative counsel that an amendment is technical in nature, we may consider, does not mean we will give permission. So don't be getting the impression that we're going to be amending bills and having public testimony here. But at this late hour, we want to make sure there's as complete a record and understanding of these issues as we go forward as possible. Any further discussion? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. On that score, when this was before the super sub, could you describe the nature of the public testimony received on this bill?
We had Philip up. No, I don't believe we did.
Okay. Well, just briefly say I'm going to vote no on this because, frankly, I don't really fear the public's involvement in the initiative process. And actually think it serves the state of Oregon, so I'm not anxious to change a system that's working. Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair.
No, Senator.
Mr. Co-Chair, I would just answer that I testified with Senator Burdick and Representative Knope in front of a House committee who heard this bill, and it was my understanding there was a large public hearing on this issue in the House. Thank you.
I appreciate that clarification, Senator. If Senator Miller's question was before the special sub, that is no way to diminish the fairly extensive public testimony that was taken on this bill on the House side, and that is absolutely correct. Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for the language that that is being changed. Can my memory be refreshed on the current provisions or initiatives?
I am going to ask Philip to come back up to give us a precise answer. I think probably every one of us could give you our understanding.
Hi. Co-Chair Westland, I apologize. Who asked the question?
Representative Hayden.
Oh, Representative Hayden.
For the record.
I apologize, Representative Hayden. Philip Schradl, Special Counsel of the Attorney General. Currently, before anyone can go out and gather signatures, one needs to have gone through and obtained a certified ballot title. And currently that is triggered by the filing of 25 signatures with the Secretary of State's office. Upon the filing of those signatures, then our office drafts a draft ballot title that can be commented upon, and we issue a certified ballot title, and that can be challenged to the Oregon Supreme Court. This proposed measure then changes the process a bit by adding a process at the front, which is upon the filing of the same 25 signatures with the Secretary of State's office, our office then drafts a document called the Initiative Petition Summary. That Initiative Petition Summary is used to circulate for the first 10% of the signatures. Upon the filing of 10% or 10 to 12% of the signatures, then that triggers notification from the Secretary of State's office to our office, and we engage in the exact same ballot title drafting process that currently exists in state law. Again, we go through a draft ballot title that can be commented upon, that we file a certified ballot title, and that can be challenged in the Oregon Supreme Court. So it moves the ballot title process later in the signature gathering process, does not elevate in any way the number of signatures that need to be gathered for getting something on the ballot.
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman. And I presume the 25 initial signatures have to be by 25 different people?
Go, Chair Westland, Representative Hayden, yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Some people have not assumed that.
That's true.
Any follow-up questions? Any further discussion?
Mr. Co-Chair, I'd like to be noted as a no vote on this, too. I think that this unnecessarily restricts access to the system.
Thank you, Representative. Any further? Senator Farioli.
Mr. Co-Chair, I note with some chagrin that very few ballot title initiatives seem to originate in my portion of the state, where the population density in the district is 0.17 persons per square mile. The additional process may serve to eliminate or at least slow down the rather odious practice of ballot title shopping, which I think is what this is aimed at. But adding this additional process may in fact simply make it easier for court challenges to be brought against ballot titles earlier in the process, when I think the objective of the or perhaps a better objective might be to get the Department of Justice or the Judicial Administration to issue or render opinions on the efficacy of ballot titles as a matter of due course, so that people know whether they are legal or not with just 25 signatures. And what we're doing here, I believe, as Representative Morgan mentions, is raising the bar, making illegal challenges easier earlier. And I think this is an attempt at a poison pill for ballot title shopping, and the unintended consequences is overcomplicating the initiative process.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? Am I to take that as a no?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Co-Chairman, I will be a no.
Any further noes? Objectors? Let the record show Representative Hayden, Morgan, and Senators Farioli and Miller are noes. Any further objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2706 is moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. It's ordered.
Floor explanation.
Vote explanation.
Just actually, I sympathize with the no votes, and I have had some of the same concerns, but had been my feelings and concerns have been partially assuaged by discussions with some of the promoters of this. That our intent was not indeed to cut off initiatives from the average person, the people that really have a grassroots interest. And to that extent, I'm a yes, and we'll be watching how this plays out in our